Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in to KER Politics. Got a really good show this week. We have a new guest who is going to take over for us in terms of the first segment and the second segment. His name is Jose Nino. I'm going to ask Mr. Nino to tell you a little bit about himself. Let me just say that he is a freelance writer. He's going to go into that. I met Jose through my friend Jeff Deist down at the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. Let's start with you, Jose. Tell our audience who haven't heard you before, other than on one daily editorial, a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was originally born in Venezuela, but came to the U.S. when I was young, and I've been politically active more or less since Ron Paul's presidential run in 2008, and I got into a lot of this space through people like Ron Paul and Pat Buchanan. I'm definitely a committed nationalist when it comes to my politics, very much into the idea of protecting private property, securing the border, national sovereignty, and having a restrained foreign policy. Nowadays, I'm a freelance writer that covers a host of topics from foreign policy to border security, among other issues. And I also am the host of the El Nino Speaks podcast that you can find on Substack as well.
Okay. Now, you make a comment in the beginning of your article, "Are neocons still in control?" Very interesting third sentence in some of the talking points that I have. And that is, politics ain't for everybody. Tell us a little bit about your background with the Republican Party, et cetera, and some of the candidates that you worked with, Jose, would you?
Well, in my previous stint as a email marketer for a Second Amendment lobby, I learned pretty well, especially during my trip to state legislatures, that a lot of the Republican Party is captured by the overall political establishment. Basically, the Republicans who talk a big game about limited government, low taxes, and other so-called conservative values, they end up turncoating their constituents. So many activists that get involved in politics, especially nationalists, populists, and other people on the so-called dissident right, will need to realize they will face obstacles and they will have to be able to operate accordingly. So they will have to put pressure on politicians that deviate from conservative norms, and that's going to not just be Democrats but also Republicans. They will have to brace themselves for the reality that Republicans will sell them out unless there's enough grassroots pressure. One thing I've learned in politics is that you can't really assume too much. You have to be willing to take proactive action against politicians that don't bend to your political will. And that's a harsh reality that most people will have to come to grips with. And if you want to be successful in the political space and realize change, you're going to have to turn up the heat on politicians.
Jimmy, take over for a while, would you?
Yeah, no, I it's interesting that your perceptions there, I think, are spot on, Jose. I was on the executive committee for the Republican Party, and not only the willingness of people that the party supports to get elected, the willingness of those individuals in office to bend to the, I would say, the powerful lobbies or the perceptions and the actual plethora of political consultants that are out there that are trying to shift you and shape you into something. I think that's really challenging, as well as the pettiness and the personal issues that really neglect the best interests of the people for individual concerns. And I think it's incredibly damaging to objectives that benefit the country. But most people don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. And I think your point there is fantastic. What do you think people can do now to kind of push back against that, basically, I'll say corruption in both parties, but in particular inside the Republican Party, with we see a number of people, senior leaders, that bow down to the lobbyist pressures at the, you know, negative benefit of their own constituents. How do we work with that?
Well, I would say you fight fire with fire, in that people should become grassroots lobbyists, if you will, in that they should go to their city council, county commission, and get more politically involved, learn what are the issues of the day in your respective locality, find like-minded people, and build organizations from scratch, attend these meetings, expose politicians that betray their constituents, and also expose bad public policy that's being passed, because ultimately all politics starts locally. You're not going to capture D.C., but you have a better chance of potentially having an impact at your city council or county commission, and then you build a network, because politics, it does boil down to networks due to the fact that a lot of the really bad policies we see implemented wherever, from your city council all the way to like the state legislature, are being promoted by interest groups, which represent a network of people, big donors and other people. So you kind of have to build like a parallel institution, if you will, to combat that. And there's a lot of issues that do rile up disaffected conservatives and other people in the political spectrum. And the way people can mount resistance is by being more engaged with your local community. Because if you really think about it, the ruling class wants us always online talking, smack-talking other people and engaging in unproductive behavior, because then we just waste all of our energy while these people in the ruling class can get away with a lot of mischief behind the scenes. But in contrast, when you get more engaged in the community and in your local politics, you're able to actually forge real world relationships and build long-term institutions that can counter the political establishment.
You know, I think one of the bigger challenges that are out there is basically the, and I think you allude to it in a number of your writings, that, you know, free speech is dead. We're being crushed by tech companies. The way that a lot of politicians get their message out or try to get their message out is through social media and through, you know, just low tech, low cost efforts that are being really silenced or at least shadow banned. That seems to me to be something that's really shaping local politics as well as national politics, and it's beginning to become, you know, incredibly damaging to a republic. We've got about a minute left. I just thought your thoughts, if we want to get started for now, to go into the next segment too, well, on free speech and silencing speech.
Yeah, Jimmy, we've only got a minute left, so I'd like to take a break here for a commercial. I want you to think about one question, Jose, that I would like to go into the second segment with. And that is the basic question of your article, which is, purely and simply, are the neocons still in control? And then, as Jim just alluded, Jose, free speech is really seemed to me to be on the ropes right now. Your article, Free Speech is Dead in This One Country, is a very interesting article. At least the topic points sure point to a lot of interest on my part. It's a real pleasure, Jose, I want to say, to have you on the program. I love the guys from the Mises Institute. I am so thankful that Ron Paul, who is not necessarily closely associated with Mises, Ron is involved with the Ron Paul Institute for Freedom and Prosperity. I have a lot of time for Ron Paul. He is a real American, in my opinion, and I admire him greatly. Stick around, you guys. We'll be right back.